Okay. Now we're on. And so the benevolence committee, you know, it used to be the deacons were for the guys and they needed something for the gals, and they decided Phoebe maybe was really in an office instead of one that had the spiritual gift of serving. And so a lot of churches had deaconess boards, and they had responsibilities as there are noted here. The idea of assisting and administering spiritual matters of the church as requested. And you'll notice there's no indication with that that was generally related to women and girls. It's not there in that now. We don't have, we've got a benevolence committee person who is a male. And we've had that for a little while in that matter. They shall also assist in the baptism of women. Now we should have had men with there. Preparation for the Lordian table. They'll serve in visitation, aiding the bereaved, and sending cards, flowers, or gifts to the sick. They will be responsible for the library and nursery. And so you can see this is a serving kind of committee. We call it benevolence. And the interesting part of it is it also has a 3-year term of office. And you can see that from the first part of it. And so these are 3 years. We try to overlap them in that matter. It doesn't always happen in that matter. But that's that office. And it's really interesting over the years how that has functioned. We had one lady on the benevolence committee for a number of years, well, it wasn't very many years, and she sent a birthday card out to everybody that had a birthday, and it came out a week ahead, and that was what she did, and it was kind of interesting. You just suddenly be reminded you had a birthday the week before. whether most people like that, some weren't too eager to have another birthday, as if it would change things. Next office is a moderator. A moderator officiates at the business meetings. The alternate moderator shall be the chairman of the board of deacons. The moderator shall be an ex officio member of all committees and boards without power to vote. So the moderator has that opportunity. If we were all into a big organization, that would be a possibility. That he could be involved in the meetings, know what's going on, and it's kind of interesting how some of these, so this has been in the Constitution for a long time, how there were people who, the moderator doesn't have a vote. Pastor is an ex officio person in the meeting, of any committee, and it seems the pastor can vote in some of that. Church clerk is the one who keeps a record. I'm on page 15. They'll keep a record of all business transactions of the church, carry on such correspondences as necessary in transferring memberships, and in other, keep a register of membership of the church and carry on official correspondence of the church. So it's just the secretarial kinds of duties that are prescribed for the church clerk. And so that in with the action of the church, a church clerk can send and officially be a signature on a letter to notify and those kinds of things. Sometimes we've had the clerk do it in letter and had an additional signature, whether it's a pastor's signature or the chairman of the board signature, depending on the kind of business. That's... You know, it's necessary, taking minutes. And that can be a little bit of a headache because of special business meetings you come in. But we have that 2-week notification, so it doesn't, it's not so inconvenient. It's just always hard to remember to do that. Church treasurer and assistant. The treasurer shall keep an account of all monies received from the church as well as monies expended, taking receipts for all disbursements. Under the supervision of the Board of Deacons, he or she shall safeguard properly all monies received, depositing them in a general fund, such fund to be administered solely under the jurisdiction of the deacons. And we at Valley have just one fund at this point. Well, we have some accounts that are separate bank accounts, but the general fund is, we used to have a deacon's fund and the account, and it was kept separately. And the church decided many years ago now that the deacon's fund normally came out of the general fund, or was taken from the general fund often, and so they just put them together and made that part of the deacon's decisions in that matter. And deacon's fund was used to help people who needed help in different ways. The quarterly and annual reports will be made to the church at the quarterly business meeting by the treasurer. Monthly reports shall be posted on the bulletin board. We tend to get quarterly reports in that. The treasurer's record shall be kept in books furnished by the church for that purpose and remain the property of the church. It's always interesting. I've gone through all of these books that I can find, and I think we've got them all. And we've even got one for young people's from back in the 20s, which is kind of interesting. And why would I be interested in that? The reason I was interested, I was trying to find out about cemetery plots. They should have been listed in treasurer's reports that would say that somebody had purchased a section or a block of graves, or a plot of six graves. And we have things in our cemetery book that are marked with family names on them. And there's no record anywhere of those families having either paid for them or having it been given to them by the church in any official action. So I went through all of the minutes, and I've gone through all of that because I kind of like to know. Fortunately, we do not have a line of people waiting to get into the cemetery in that matter. I do have this one that I've got to get a hold of now. Trying to get this form paper out, but I need to get on the phone and call somebody and say, I think you got the wrong cemetery, because I can't find that name in this cemetery. Because somebody said, well, this family has a block, and they wanted to buy a lot so this person can be buried there down the road a piece. And so wanted to be near family. It will feel better if you're buried in a cemetery with family members rather than our attitudes are interesting in that matter. But that's forced me years ago to start trying to find out this information, because we have, I would guess about 8 plots maybe up there, and with family names, and some of them I know have been used. But I have no record that it is legally theirs in that matter. I mean, as far as payment or official church action. And I've looked and looked and looked, because I think that some of those are, those plots of people have no idea that the family name is on them. And if we had a lot more traffic in the cemetery, we might come to a point that we need them. And that, but at this point, where our averages are, it'll be a long time. They'll have to worry about it in the trib period. I'm thankful I'm not going to be here. And it's interesting in that matter. Records, assistant treasurer is elected by the church to assist the treasurer in receiving and counting contributions and offering and serve in his absence. The assistant treasurer kind of is the safety person that double checks on it. I just went through this thing with Hurricane and this church he's involved with down there. And they didn't have the safety arrangement to prove. I mean, they need to have at least two people checking the offering and counting it and having their signature on that. And there was one person who was doing it, and that one person was also depositing it in the bank. So there was so after our discussion, I hope that they do what they should do. I said, well, why don't you, I mean, Hurricane's the guy that puts it in the bank. And I said, have two people, have the church select two people to count the offering, and then after they're done, you with them count it again and fill out your deposit slips. And that will, again, make things safe. And this, I'm not sure when this was slipped into our minute, I mean our constitution, or put in our constitution. I don't know the history. I do know the history of something that happened here in Cherry Grove during the early 70s when the church treasurer absconded with what little funds came through the offering plates of Valley Baptist. He took chunks of it. And if you're going to do it, you better just take the cash, because people can prove what they paid by checks. And I think that was how he was caught. And what happened in that case was he was threatened with charges by the church. The church said, we're going to turn you over to the authorities for embezzlement. And he pled with the church not to do that. He said he'd pay him back. He got on a schedule and paid him back. Of course, another treasurer had to check it out, and I think that's where this assistant came out of that. And it was kind of sad, and evidently, from what I heard, he did pay it all back. In fact, there was really no good reason for him to embezzle. But it just may have been his thing in that matter. The treasurer will be responsible for keeping the records of all contributions, and that's why, and they're confidential. And like I've said before, they're confidential, and only the treasurer and the assistant treasurer have any idea who gives what. And the rest of us, well, those who are in leadership, I certainly don't want to know. It's just, I'm concerned that it's so easy, it's too human to cater to people who give more than others. That kind of ruins the oneness in our perspective, and we don't want to do that. So at Valley, you can't give enough to make an impression on a pastor, because he doesn't know that you did, and so you can't buy us off in that matter. And the worst part is, I know churches where, I mean, there's a lot of history around that problem. You know, somebody says, oh, you don't treat me right, I'm going to quit giving. Well, if some of them done it, then you find out how bad it was. I mean, how much they were giving in the matter, and it's interesting. So the records, that's why you get a receipt that Wanda gives out at the right time, and I trust that receipt has been of some use recently and will be for the next few days in that matter. We don't have many days. Wendy's about out of that job, her part-time job. Or do they let you go over for the 15th?
He said we'll go past the 15th.
Oh, okay. Well, you can still pray for her then. Because that's what she does during tax season. Is that moonlighting?
Sure.
Yeah, that works. the treasurer will maintain a ledger showing the status of budgeted funds at the request of the Board of Deacons. An audit of the church treasurer's book shall be done by whoever the board designates. The results of this audit shall be given the next business meeting after the completion of the audit. At one point, it was required an annual audit, and we had voted for an auditor. And, you know, it was funny. The toughest position to fill when we had an auditor was the auditor. I mean, you just had to, I mean, the nominating committee had to twist arms and twist arms. I still remember one guy, they put him on as an auditor just because he was willing to do whatever they asked him to do. And he did it. He did well to get his own taxes done. But he went through the best he could, and it was okay. You know, I mean, in that, if there had been any hanky-panky in the books, he probably would have missed it. It's, and with the amount of finance that comes through our assembly, Cherry Grove has generally been a church that hasn't had a huge amount of financial traffic on it. We don't have any trusts. We don't have any, a lot of big financial issues, which is what it's all about. We're just a bunch of saints enjoying that opportunity. Sunday school superintendent is the next office, bottom of 15. And he works with a pastor, with a board of deacons, and he's the one that's in charge of teachers, as the church may require, in matters pertaining to the Sunday school. Obviously, if that's he's the Sunday school superintendent, it must be those matters. And so various teachers appointed will perform duties as the Sunday school superintendent shall designate. He may, and it's not necessary, provide a budget. It was kind of interesting for years and years. I was so used to being in a church where we didn't have a huge Sunday school budget, but it was a bit of a budget because there were materials that were used in classes for certain age groups. And I think the last person that used that budget here was my wife, Pat. So it's been a long time since this has happened. And what she would do, she would get Sunday school material for her primary kids so they'd have something to, color or whatever, rewrite the Sunday school lessons, and she loved to use the flannel graph stuff that they made, and they were professionally done, so she could teach the kids with those. And so it wasn't a huge amount. It was almost funny to me sometimes, $30 every 6 to 3 months or something like that for the Sunday school. But that is something that is possible, and the Sunday school superintendent's the one that essentially approves of that. Head usher he can appoint as many ushers as he needs. When Gabe gets overpowered with all of the needs to have an usher, he can appoint one for each side. Even four altogether with him. That possibility. And so he's involved with ushers for our regular services and special services, for seating and comfort of the congregation, and make sure the offering plates are around. It's kind of interesting how ours tend to wander once in a while. They're always up on the platform somewhere. But when we have communion, they get relocated on that. And so it's kind of interesting. I've often wondered how long we've had those offering plates on it. Now, the bottoms aren't all dinged up. It's the outside. So you can tell a church by, if they have a metal offering plate, you can tell what kind of giving there is. Because if there's a lot of coinage, it's all dinged up from the coins. And if it's paper, it's not so dinged up. Ours is just from longevity, I think, is where these are. They work fine, so thank the Lord on that. And he makes sure the offerings are where the treasurer can get them. A legal rep. Interesting office. This is the only foot in our door. Well, finances aren't away because we have approval for IRS exemption related to your giving. I mean, you can take it as a nonprofit. That's what the government's messing with us there. Someday they may take that away. Right now there's a great big move to take away the property tax exemption. And if they took away property tax exemption, that would be, I don't know what it would be out here. a couple thousand probably, a year in that matter, maybe even more. I just don't know what Cherry Grove is good for on that matter. But government insists that because we are technically a corporation and that our board is a corporate of officers, but they require that we have a legal rep. And so they, someone who can sign. When somebody has his office, Dan has faithfully done this office for a long time. I don't know how long it's been, but it's been quite a while. And the amount of effort is just huge. Let's just, I don't think he's, he may have done it 10 years. Let's just say that in round figures. The amount of work he's had to do is sign his name 10 times. Tough office. We don't usually have it. I mean, there's, we have to sign a card on corporation. And that's the key thing in that. And I don't remember that we've ever had anything from the state that needed his signature otherwise. So it's just kind of an interesting state and church and all of that. Music chairman. This involves whatever music is involved in that. And as musically as we are and involved, Billy doesn't have a whole lot of extra responsibility in that. You know, it used to be that if the music chairman couldn't provide a special music, he'd sing himself. But we won't do that to Billy. On that. But an opportunity. I don't know why I need to change. I need to highlight, I mean bold that. Social committee. Probably the busiest committee in the church. Why? Because we have what? Pollux. And we do have some social events. And so that means there's more activity there, and it's for the committees for the organization of all social functions, potlucks, parties, banquets, receptions. The committee shall elect a chairperson in its first meeting of the year. Usually what has happened here is whoever can get something done steps in for each event or however because of our busy ladies there. And the social committee at any time can call upon the members to help with these functions. That shouldn't be in the statement, but it is, because at least there was a day where there was not always a lot of volunteerism in the matter. And it's interesting. Yeah, and that prior approval of it by a deacon for required estimated expenses that exceed $100 for an event, any receipts for bills incurred by the social committee for these functions shall be turned over to the treasurer for reimbursement. So that's, like I said, we have these opportunities that are, I mean, that are designated by the church. Did we get a B in here? Had more volume than I thought. Normal. The other day, my apple tree is in bloom. And I looked out and I thought, man, those are big bees. But they're not, you know. And I had to look two or three times and I realized I had several hummingbirds were in my blooming apple tree. They must have been going crazy with a whole tree full of blossoms. They were darting all over. And I thought, man, I think that's the first time I've seen them in that particular tree. Maybe it hadn't been sunny most of the time when it's in bloom. Pulpit committee. Pulpit committee will consist of the following officers. Pastor, pastors, deacons, church clerk, treasurer, moderator, moderators ex officio. If any offices above except the pastor are vacant, they must be filled before a pulpit committee can be formed. So the need to have an office filled, I just know too much about too many churches and church politics. I've known instances where people have chosen not to fill an office so they couldn't have a pulpit committee, which tells you how nicely the sin nature works. Sin nature can find any way out of anything. And that's what happens there. He's like a crippled man, you know, with his...
Very distracting.
Courtney just walked in. He had a bullet under his chin. He's walking along like he's got a bad neck. Anyway, the Pope is going to, we're on the bottom of 16, moving to 17, and so when there's a Pope coming, and usually this is to fill the office of pastor. It's interesting you have pastors on that committee because we've run with plural sometimes. And so that's the way it is. They elect a chair, a corresponding secretary, which has all the work. And they're essentially, if you're on a public committee, it's the keep of your mouth shut committee. You're not to talk to anybody about what goes on there. I know, it's just awful when the church is looking for a pastor and they don't know what the public committee's doing. It may be better when they find out the public committee just been going crazy and can't find anybody and they just keep doing this their thing, and it's very difficult, but it is one. And in order to recommend for a pastor, it's unanimous from the committee. Unanimous means not one can say no. I remember a dear brother, one of our seminary guys, who's in a church, went to a church. And there was a family in the church, and the whole church was behind that seminarian. It was pretty strong, but that family didn't like one word. That's the word dispensationalist. And they didn't know what one was, but they didn't like the word. And so one of the members of the family was on that public committee, and he was not invited to candidate. And the irony of it was, within months, that family left that church. And they were divisive, was part of the problem. And that was a part of it. So honestly, I think that the church ended up in the permissive will of God rather than the perfect will of God. And they went years, and I think they've gone years, without a man that will teach them the spiritual life. And so, you know, they just found somebody to shine up the bootstraps. And so I don't know, but it was kind of interesting because of that. I have no problem with the unanimous, a requirement. The duty is to explore the field of Baptist ministers. It's interesting you put the word Baptist there. This was a Baptist church. And, we're not too distinctive in relationship. I mean, we hold Baptist distinctives. We don't punch Baptist. We punch Bible. Now, we're not called a Bible church. The reason that we wouldn't have changed the name to Bible church is because it would have been identified with another group or groups that are that way. And they're not as, Baptists aren't that good. But they don't, I have to laugh. One of those pastors in the Bay Area said, "You guys call these Baptist distinctives," and he said, "We just see them as biblical distinctives." So he said, "We're as Baptistic as you guys are." The funny part was, he was, but most of the churches in Northern California were not that consistent. And so that's why it says here, I stirred up a lot of trouble and didn't know how much trouble I stirred up. I think it was in the first year that we were pastors. I did a series on the Baptist distinctives. Why we're Baptist. And I didn't realize how many people were not Baptist. But they seemed to like to believe in the distinctives. And it was funny. And I don't write the Baptist name on it. Sometimes I use it with a purpose. I say I'm a pastor, but I will, for example, for some more official things that relate to me as a pastor, I'll say Baptist minister. And I don't have to worry about it so much like what the state of Oregon used to require us to register with the county clerk in order to officiate at a wedding, and I used Baptist minister when I did that. And they knew, they would have known it because I was a pastor of Valley Baptist Church. And so in the records, if they still have them, they changed that. The law is different now than it was. On the back of my ordination certificate is a seal by the county clerk of Washington County that says I'm on such and such a page in their register, and they used to require that when you filled out the wedding license material with the state. So I used to have to sign that and say my name is on page such and such in Washington County. But I could do it anywhere in the state of Oregon. In that. So it's interesting in that matter. Now, why did I do that? It's all Baptist. There's some ethics here in this statement. That is, the committee will not disrupt any pastor in his field or make known that this man is under consideration until they've written word that he is willing to consider a call if given a favorable vote by the church. And then only by their written recommendation to the church is the man's name revealed. There are a lot of people that are busy trying to pull people out of their pastorates, and you just never know what's going to happen. I remember hearing of a situation where a morning service, there were three professors, I think it was, from a school 800 miles away or so, from where that was, anyway, a distance away, showed up for a morning service at a church. The irony was that there were people that knew these guys. The minute they walked in, they knew the church that they were affiliated with because it was a college church, and they had an idea that they were probing with the possibility of getting that man to be their pastor. So they were doing that, and it's good. That's a good thing to do, go and walk in and relate. But they couldn't do what they would have liked to have done because they hadn't, they hadn't notified anybody. They just walked in. And I don't remember the rest of that story in that matter, but that did happen. And so what happens? They investigate. Try to discover spiritual, educational, theological qualifications. I'm under E to serve the needs of the pastorate. They will present to the church the name of only one candidate and only such as they have unanimously agreed as being desirable to minister for the pulpit committee. And so the pulpit committee calls a special business meeting to consider the call of the recommended candidate. 3/4 of all ballots cast shall be necessary for the election of the pastor. Following the election of a pastor, the pulpit committee will send a letter setting forth the terms of the call, making a place available for the signature of the board of deacons and church clerk, and provide a space for date and signature of the pastor as he accepts the call. The candidate shall return to the church clerk a signed, dated copy of the letter signifying his acceptance of the offer. And so it's just, there's a lot of interesting ethics that are required in a relationship to call of a pastor. Now you'll notice that Valley has a 75% vote requirement. So it's more than a majority. It's not quite a super majority. I know some churches that have 90% in that matter. In a seminary class, we end up talking a little bit about what happens if you know that there's a 75% and you end up with a 76%. You better know the Lord's will for sure, because you have almost 1/4 of the people that didn't want you to some extent for whatever reasons. I know one church in Nevada that had that high rate, and in fact, in some things they had 100% vote was required before by the church, and there was a guy in that church that never let him get 100%, and it was a real frustration. He just did not want them to do anything, and so with 100%, they couldn't change their doctrinal statement because it took 100%. And there were problems with, well, things that need to be put in the doctrinal statement. And this guy didn't have a problem doctrinally. He just didn't want anybody to change anything. If they wanted to affiliate with a group of churches, it had to be 100% vote. And it wasn't that they didn't like the groups of churches that they were fellowshipping with. They were fellowshipping with churches of like faith, but they could not join in the fellowship. And so they essentially, because the rest of the churches said, okay, we'll let them come to our youth rallies and come to our camp and do all of this sort of thing, because they knew the problem there. I always still wonder if that church still exists. The funny part is I do happen to know in that town there are two or three other so-called fundamental churches. And I'm just real curious, because I had some real good friends in that church at one point. Anyway, if a recommended candidate's not elected during the business meeting, the pulpit committee starts all over again. Well, that's what it means. We'll reconvene and begin the process over again and find another one. A pulpit committee can be hard in that matter. In that, so before extending an offer, the church should carefully determine its terms. This will often avoid later confusion and misunderstanding. The relationship between the church and the pastor is more than a contract. But they do enter into contractual relationship. Therefore, the church should state the following items. This doesn't hurt, because a lot of church people don't understand some of the things you need to do things. What is it called? In 1 Corinthians 14, it talks about tongues, but it also says we do all things decently and in order. And there's another all, isn't it? All things decently in order, not just the tongue-speaking issue. In that, I'm saying I just wrote it this week in my paper. And so, is the offer for a specific time or an indefinite tenure? Which it should be. What will be the salary? When and how will it be paid? Will living quarters be furnished by the church if owned by the church? How will upkeep be provided? What provision will be made for vacations? Attendance to conventions. I don't like the word convention in here, but it was there early. Whatever, fellowship meetings. Valley was in the convention. And it was in the convention 34 probably years ago. And we voted out of the Swedish Baptists, and they called it a convention. They did that because the American Baptist Convention liked the word, and the Swedes were affected by that. Absence for the expense of the pastor, what provision will be made for office supplies, secretarial help, transportation expense, and similar items. The way we function, we don't have that much to do with that. And I always smile when I understand how God provides many of these things. That we need, the church does supply a little in relationship to office supplies in some areas. So that's good. Does the church participate in the pastor's retirement plan? Not a bad thing to say we don't have a retirement plan, because you don't want to have a pastor come in expecting to have one. That needs to be clear. I understand the Holy Spirit and His leading, and He works all things out. It's just the pastor needs to know when he is asked to come. And then will the church give loyal support to the pastor's leadership as he follows Christ? And I would probably rephrase that, but he follows more than just Christ, and deals with the Holy Spirit and the Father in this whole thing. But will they take exception and follow his leadership? That's a tough commitment in many ways when people make dumb decisions when it comes to pastors. I stepped out of this role that I'm in at the moment, and that is, I look at it from a seminary professor's perspective, And I think many churches have the pastors they deserve. And it's their own fault when they have a pastor that doesn't feed them, doesn't teach them, doesn't provide leadership, that beats them, that drives them. And I'm using all of these terms because some of them will call people out of desperation. You get a pulpit committee and they've gone through two guys and the third one comes along, they're all ready to call him before they even talk to him in some cases because of the pressure of it. And you want a shepherd that's your shepherd and that meets the qualifications for the office. And so that's important. And so the Constitution does say that underneath, but churches need to know. Letter H, these matters need not be brought in detail to the church at large, but should be agreed upon in the congregational business meetings in connection with consummation of the offer, and should be clearly stated in the letter through which the offer is transmitted. The minute that the new pastor is installed, the pulpit committee is done. It's over. Often, the pulpit committee will be in charge of that installation. Some churches like to have a service called an installation service where they welcome the new pastor. And that's when it's over. Okay, well, I think that we are going to stop. I can see that, won't say more, but we've done what I wanted to do. We are not through, but we're going to be through before we know it. We will have probably two Sundays left of Constitution, and then we'll go from there. So this next section, you see, it includes organizations, then we have services and meetings, and then the grand conclusion is that important section called miscellaneous. And Miss Elenius is one of those ladies that gives us a lot of trouble. No. Okay, Father, may you bless us as we continue in the day. Thank you for letting us be together. Thank you for giving us a reason to be together. Thank you for so great salvation. And may we be rejoicing in it in its present tense today. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. All right.